My name is Varanya Chaubey, and I'm here with Mr. Khalfan Khalfan, who is Executive Director of the Organization of People with Disabilities. Today is November 17th, 2008. I'd like to begin the interview by learning a little bit more about your personal background. So would you describe the position you hold now?
As I said, my name is Khalfan, and I was born and brought up here in Zanzibar. And before, I worked with the Minister of Education, and I worked as a school teacher for secondary schools for almost 20 years. And within those years, I also became the head of schools for about 12 years. And then in 1981, during the International Year of Disabled People, I got the opportunity to travel to Singapore to attend a Disabled People's International meeting. Of course, at that time, there was no organization in Zanzibar. So I was invited as an observer, but I learned a lot about disability movements and formation of organization. So when I came back to Zanzibar in 1981, I mobilized a few people around, and we started talk forming an organization. It took some time because, you know, after the 1964 revolution, all societies were banned in Zanzibar. So it was very difficult to organize a society. So we tried from 81 and were successful to register this organization in 1985. So then we started this organization as a disability rights movement. And we started with a few people, but now we have got a membership of more than 4,000 in both islands of Unguja and Pemba. And I was a founder chair of the organization, but later on, when we started to make accountability procedures, we thought that a chairperson should not be the director, so there should be separation of powers. So we decided that there should be leadership on one hand, and there should be management on the other. That's why I became head of the management, and I got this position of executive director. But also I worked with international organization. For example, I was the member of the World Council of Disabled Peoples International for more than 20 years. And the last 5 years, that is from 2002 up to 2007, I was elected as the vice chair for development of Disabled Peoples International. But now I've just retired, and I thought that other people should take over that one. Also, I was the chairperson of Pan-African Federation of Disabled People for about 12 years. In the last election, I also stepped down. So now my position is the immediate past chair of Pan-African Federation of the Disabled. So I'm a member of the executive committee of that organization. I also founded the Eastern African Federation of the Disabled, which is called IFOD, of which I'm holding the position of the Secretary General. Which I intend in the next election also to step down. I got also the opportunity to participate at the United Nations during the Ad Hoc Committee on the Development of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So I was attending those meetings. I attended about 6 out of 8 sessions of the UN on the development of the convention. So in brief, I'm a disability activist now, and I'm really very much concerned on the rights of disabled people. And we were also very successful to make a disability bill in Zanzibar, which now we have got a Disability Act number 9 of 2006, which is called Act on Disabled Persons Rights and Opportunities. And also there's a policy on disability. And now there is a Zanzibar National Disability Council, of which I'm a member of that council. I'm also a member of the Council on Education in Zanzibar. And I've been in many, many other boards. I've been working. Thank you.
Wow, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Would you talk a little bit about the kind of work that you may have done over the years at any time in elections processes?
Well, in fact, the first election was in 1995, this was the first multi-party election in Zanzibar and in Tanzania. So I was, in fact, I was recruited, or I recruited myself to be an observer in that particular election. And then, in the election of 2005, we became more active, where we thought that we needed to sensitize disabled people to use their rights to elect or to be elected. So that was the time when we also requested funding from UNDP, United Nations Development Program, where we got some funding, and we then managed to organize a training of trainers program, where we trained a group of disabled people on the constitution, on the electoral laws and all that, so that they could also go into the villages to train disabled people understanding their rights as far as election is concerned. So we were very much involved in that one, and at the end we were able to produce this kind of report that involved election. But that's how our involvement is, and we hope also to participate in the coming election, which should be in 2010. So now we want to be more involved in this election and to make sure that disabled people also not only vote, but they should also be part of being voted into these political positions.
I'd like to ask a little bit about, we'll talk in more detail later, but first, would you just describe the issues surrounding the participation of people with disabilities in the electoral process here in Zanzibar?
Well, I think the participation, it is assumed that everything is all right, but practically it is not, because A, many disabled people don't understand that also they've got the right to vote as a constitutional right, as a basic right. That is one thing. But the other thing is, with some other disabilities, it becomes very difficult for people. For example, the question of mobility and transportation is a bit difficult. Then also the question of, especially those people with visual impairment, because, you know, they don't have these tactile ballot papers where they can be able to read and be able to choose themselves. They only depend on assistant, but even people with visual impairment, they do complain that as much as they trust their assistant, but you never know when it goes to the ballot paper what it's going to do. Because, you know, the person has got, the visual impaired person has got his own interest, and the assistant has gone his own interest. And if they're different, then that's where the problem comes. Then the other thing is, it's a bit difficult in some polling stations for disabled people, especially to be private. The question of privacy is not there. Either the booths could be too small, for example, for those people using the wheelchair, so it could be open. And maybe some of the polling stations are not accessible, either with stairs or other obstructions or obstacles. So it becomes a little bit difficult. So we thought participating in election actively means we wanted to make changes. That's what we really want, to make changes so that, you know, people with disabilities can participate in election much freer, so that they can be able to do the election as free as they can, without interference by a third party or an assistant or something like that. So that is why we are getting more involved in this issue of election.
You mentioned changes, and I would like to know, what are the changes in the recent past, if any, that have been made to facilitate greater participation of people with disabilities?
Well, at least it has been allowed for people with disabilities to be assisted by people whom they themselves trust. That has been accepted. Normally, they don't allow two people to get into the, voting booth or whatever. But in this case, they do allow disabled people to go with the attendants or to go there with the assistants so that they can help them, if they're visually impaired, maybe at least to read the names, and maybe to tell him, okay, vote for me at this particular person, and so on. And with those with physical disability also, they're getting help with the assistant, maybe to get more access to the places. So that is one. But the second thing also, people with disabilities, once they are at the voting station, normally they get help that they don't stand on long queues. So they can be assisted to get in fast, to vote, and then to get out of the polling station. So these are new developments that are taking place. And we tried last year to have these tactile ballot papers, but unfortunately the commission couldn't make it, though they promised that they're going to do it next election. They're calling tactile ballot papers. It's a kind of, you know, you don't need to have Braille, because, you know, maybe many people cannot read Braille. But this tactile ballot paper is a kind of ballot paper with holes, and they're just being put there in their pictures. And then once you say, okay, the pictures are one from right to left, so and so and so and so and so, and then you can be able to fill it, and then wherever you want to fill, and then you can put your mark. So this has been practiced on Tanzania mainland in the last election, but it was not here. So we hope it's going to be there in the next election.
In 2010?
2010, yeah.
The names that are in order, how are people told that this is the order in which the names appear on the ballot?
That will be either your assistant will tell you, or the polling station officer would say. For example, from your left, you don't have to say one, two, or three, because it's not a question of looking numbers. You say from left to right, there's X for CCM, then there's Y for CUF, then there's W for Chadema, just like that. And then you capture that, and then you say, okay. And then even if it goes out, you can just feel and say, okay, you either you want one, two, three, depends, and then you can put your mark. Even older people who cannot read can use that.
What are the concerns about using this kind of tactile ballot paper that still has some element of trusting another person who then tells you what order the photos appear on? Is that a concern at all?
Because we have not practiced it, so it's very difficult. But it could be, especially with people with visual impairment. You know, it could be that maybe you know the affiliation of that particular person, and then maybe instead of saying the first one is of this party, you say the third one is of that party, and know that's the party that that person loves, and then he votes the wrong person. It can happen, but we have not practiced it, so we cannot say exactly how difficult or how cheating people could experience in that particular type.
And have there been any reports from the mainland where this was tried about potential blips in the system that come up?
No, I'm not sure, maybe, but we have not received any report. But definitely we're going to use the experience and develop that one, yeah.
So these changes that have come about, would you describe who are the main players involved in creating these kinds of changes and generally working to create greater participation?
Well, first it's we ourselves as a movement, but also we worked with other NGOs. For example, we work with NGOs like Zanzibar Legal Service Centers, Zanzibar Law Society, Women Lawyers Association, and other NGOs and so on. But the other thing is ZEC has been willing enough to accept those suggestions. So that has helped to make those changes. Because if they could refuse, then that could make things difficult. We might have achieved, but it could have been very difficult. But they accepted that that is a right, and that right has to be enjoyed by all people. So they accepted to make those changes. Though there is still something which is haunting me, the question of still a group of people with intellectual disability are not really involved in election. And this is because there is, you know, a statement in the in the election law, which says, you know, only people with sound mind. So we're always asking, who determines who's got a sound mind? And what is a sound mind? And who is not without a sound mind? You see, because in other countries, people with intellectual disabilities represent themselves, and they can vote. But here they're confusing intellectual disability with people who are sick, mentally sick. And these are two different issues, two different things. So now we want also to convince the Electoral Commission at least to understand this, that we have people with intellectual disability or mental disability, and we've got people who are mentally sick. And so mentally sick is the question that determine a sound mind. But with the intellectual disability, there's no issue of a sound mind. The mind is there and the mind is sound. Maybe the development of the mind is a bit slower than others. So this is one area where people are really missing the target of their rights as far as election is concerned. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is also, I think generally other NGOs have accepted these concerns that we've raised. That's why we got the support of, because we work together as a kind of a group, and we did form a kind of a committee with all NGOs, we call, you know, steering committee or something like that, that takes over all these issues. So it was not only disabled people's organization are fighting, but even other NGOs are supporting us in claiming those rights and getting those rights.
You mentioned that the ZEC has been open to these suggestions. Would you describe the ways in which you have approached the ZEC, or the kinds of partnerships you may have formed with them, how often you meet, what kind of consultations occur?
Yeah, at least with the experience of the last election is, first they took the initiative of organizing a meeting with the Disabled People's Organization here in Zanzibar. We have discussed election and the barriers of election for people with disabilities. So we raised all these issues to them, and they took them. And then when we because, you know, even if you get funding, even if you want to do any training on election or whatever it is, you have to get a permit from the Electoral Commission. So they have to permit you to do, even if you want to be an observer, you have to get a permit, a kind of something like that. So when we had that one, then we did consult them that we want to do A, B, C, D, E in this particular area, and then they accepted that we should continue to do it. So, and whenever there's, for example, when we wanted to introduce this tactile ballot papers, there was somebody from Washington came here to give that example of the ballot paper, how it looks like. So we informed the Electoral Commission, they agreed, so we and that person went to the Electoral Commission, we showed them practically how it looks and how it's going to work and all that. And they agreed, but later on they said it was too late for them to do it. So, because, you know, you don't need to print as many as ballot papers, no. You just print, for example, in one station if you can keep only one. So many people can use that. You don't need to have, for each person you should have the same. Because that one, you just put it there, the ballot paper is down. Once you take out that one and the ballot paper is just going. So it can be used by many people. So in a way they were very cooperative in that sense. Well, though they have not practiced some of the recommendations, and they promised that they're going to do it in 2010, so we hope for that.
How far in advance of the previous election, the 2005 election, was this proposal taken to the ZEC to introduce tactile ballot papers?
What's the question?
When was it proposed to the ZEC?
Yeah, in fact, we did introduce that, I think, less than a year before the election. So they had a reason to say that, you know, you were a bit late. Yeah, less than a year. But it was not really very late, because Tanzania mainland, they were able to make it. But I think maybe it was not clear to them what it all means and all that. But now we have already started to talk to them. And one of our members, the Secretary General of our organization, is attending, you know, meeting on the committee of the ZEC on a regular basis. So she's the one who's taking over these issues.
And is there some kind of timetable right now for how this will proceed on the ZEC's part?
No, not yet. I think now they're working, I don't know, but they're working on, I think, the registration book. And they say they're going to start it next year.
I'd also like to ask, what are the sorts of funding sources that the ZEC or your organization can rely on or that you have in order to introduce these changes, such as tactile ballot papers?
Well, for us, I think this is our concern, but it has to be, because as a right, it means ZEC has to implement that one. It's not for us to fund that particular issue, because it is a right, and they're the ones who are organizing election, so it means they have to include in their budget proposal that they're going to have that one. So our main concern is just to bring that over, to advocate for it, and to make sure that it takes place. But how, it's their concern, or they have to do it themselves.
There are several phases to the electoral process at which arrangements probably need to be made. So I'd like to start with registration. Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges of registering people with disabilities?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, the biggest challenge is accessibility and transportation. It may be that the place where they register, it could be 1 kilometer from where people stay or 2 kilometers, and that could give a bit of a problem for people with disabilities. But that does not mean that they should be denied that right. So there should be other facilities to help them, you know, register. And that should be the work of the Electoral Commission, to make sure that each and every individual is being registered. So basically that's one of the biggest obstacles. The second thing is also disabled people understanding that it is their right to register and it is their right to vote. So we need to raise awareness on that particular area. So that could be another problem. If there's no awareness, people feel that this is not so important, so why should we bother, why should we waste time and all that. So you need to create awareness. And this awareness is what we are doing in our work on advocating and advocacy. We have to do that. And last year we managed to work with about 5,000 people with disabilities on this particular area of election. We gave them training, and most of them went to register, and most of them went to vote. But then when it comes to voting, the problem is if there's any eruption of, let us say, you know, problem arising from the stations, maybe people fighting or that one, then disabled people are getting a little bit uncomfortable. Because, you know, if anything happens, it means they are the ones to become the victims. So maybe that's another barrier that they feel, why should we go to register and then vote? And we have experienced that violence for 2 elections or 3 elections. And then, so people are getting that kind of fear that if I go there, if anything happens, it means I'm going to be the victim. Because maybe I cannot run, I cannot see, and I could be stampede, whatever happens. So this could be some of the problems that people with disabilities are facing.
Have there been any steps to rectify these things, particularly transportation or security of people with disabilities?
Well, security is there generally, because, you know, in all polling stations they do keep security, like police and all that. Transportation is not organized. It's only the candidates. Sometimes they feel maybe these are going to vote for me, so maybe some of them do organize to take those people to the polling station, get vote, and then send them back. I remember that some of them, they do that, but not all of them. So it's not really something reliable. It could happen randomly.
And in terms of, you mentioned this seems like a very pertinent concern, particularly here with the violence. Are there any recommendations you have made or that you are thinking of that could make this slightly less risky for a person with disabilities to participate?
Yeah, I think one of the recommendations which is being implemented is disabled people, once they're at the polling station, they should get the opportunity to vote first and then go. And that is happening now. So once a disabled person is at the polling station, he or she is being helped to get in first, get vote, and then goes away. So at least that one is taking place.
And have there been any practical problems in implementing this measure?
I don't think so. I don't think there has been any problem. I think, you know, the culture of Zanzibar is giving that kind of facility. You know, once you're a disabled person in any place, which is not good in a way because, you know, it comes to a kind of a sympathy which you don't feel is good, or overprotection, which is not good. But in many instances, once a disabled person is there, then everybody would just sit aside and say, let him or let her go. So at least we have that support even from the community as well.
Apart from security issues, there are a lot of other pressures, political pressures, or, you know, various things that can limit people's right to vote. And what are the steps taken to safeguard people with disabilities, particularly from these kinds of pressures?
Pressures like?
So, for instance, politically, there could be some pressures of, you know, how they should vote, if they should vote, things like that.
You know, one thing is that many disabled people fear to attend these political rallies during the election or before the election, that most of them end up in a kind of semi-violence. So it becomes a little bit difficult for them. So most of them do fear to go into those rallies. And those rallies are very important because, you know, attending them, you can be able to hear what policies, what things political parties are talking they're going to do and all that. But with many disabled people, some do go, but with some it becomes, especially those with visual impairment and mobility impairment, becomes very difficult for them to attend. And just fearing that if anything happens, then they are going to get that problem first. And so we did recommend that there should be political tolerance. We as an organization do preach that one, political tolerance, and that people should just talk and let other people listen, and there should be no, why should people fight and all this. But in Zanzibar, you never know. It never happens. Once we are in election, we expect all those things happening. We have seen that in 1995. We have seen that in 2000. And we've seen that in 2005. So I don't know, 2010.
Has it been an issue here at all that maybe disabled people were forced to vote a certain way by political parties, maybe for instance when they were given transportation, and that was also a way to influence who they voted for? Has that been an issue at all?
No, it hasn't come to a realization. Definitely, if a candidate comes to pick you, he's telling you indirectly that you vote for me. And if you vote for another person, if it's in a private, then that's all. But normally they feel it's a kind of an influence, but it has not come out vividly as a problem, so we have never experienced that. No people have come to complain about that. At least on our side, we have not received that one.
You've mentioned the training programs that were conducted in order to you train people who were then able to go out and train other people on the electoral process for people with disabilities.
Yes.
Would you describe that process a little bit? How did you recruit trainers? What materials did they use? How did they go about their work?
Well, as far as we're concerned, we did recruit our own people, those with quite good qualification and who can be very good trainers. And then there was a training of trainers, and this was organized by UNDP. So even our trainers also participated in that one. Then from there, they went to the community to train. So they were using the constitution, and they're using other, you know, posters. And there are also some booklets, so we've got them in our library. And we do distribute those booklets, which is talking about how to vote and the meaning of voting, the right to vote, and all that kind of things. So all these were prepared by the steering committee of the NGOs, and they were funded by UNDP to be published. So we did use those materials, posters and booklets and all that.
And the training that they went to at UNDP, was that a general training or specifically for this?
Specifically for that. Not on disability. Specifically for what we call voters' education. It was called voters' education.
Mm-hmm. And how many people were involved from this organization in the training?
Well, can I have that book?
Oh, sure. This one?
I think we did, as an organization, what we did first is we tried to find out the training needs assessment. So we did that one. And that training need assessment helped us to identify what kind of training our people would like to do. So those training of trainers, we taught about 33 people, and from Unguja and from the island of Pemba. So there were about 22 in Unguja and 11 on the other island. So, and then this training was really talking about duties and responsibilities of those trainers, communication, mobilization strategies, they're talking about that, human rights, the role of citizens, political reconciliation, political tolerance and violence. So all these, they were teaching the people when they were going to the villages and to the community to talk about that. And then we had also awareness raising meeting, which we did in each district, and there we were able to have about 533 people already attending those in all the districts of the Zanzibar. Yeah, so I think we also used mass media. For example, we can have even these papers that are talking about disability and all those kinds of things. And then we had also awareness raising meetings, which we listed them by gender, and that we have about 750 people, that is 370 males and 380 females attend those meetings. And then we went district by district, so I've got all these statistics for the last election. And then we do have, for example, the issue of physical disabilities. The issue of distance from polling centers and residential areas during election would act as a hindrance. That's one, as I told you. Inaccessible polling centers, which would rob them their right to vote in secrecy. Lack of supportive appliances. Example, some of them, they don't have wheelchairs that could help them to go to the polling stations and things like that. And for deaf people, we thought that communication was insufficient. There were no sign language interpreters, so it was difficult for them to understand. And for blind people, we say that there was lack of enough guides to escort them to the, for example, to the campaign rallies or to go to the voting stations, lack of braille documents from Zanzibar Electoral Commission, at least to read the laws and all that. The secrecy of the whole exercise will be missing, as they will have to rely on somebody to read for them, and also lack of guiding sticks, those white cans. So these are some of them. Yeah, in fact, people with mental disability say that they should be given names of contestants as early as possible in order to claim them before time, but they should be allowed to vote, which they were not allowed to vote at that time. So that is what we have been doing. I don't know if I've got another copy I could find for you, if you can have them. But here you can see we have listed all the statistics, all the problems, and all the successes that we've done.
Now, when you have these meetings, it sounds like there were quite a few with quite a few attendees.
Mm-hmm.
How do you determine the location of these meetings? Do you have a membership base by which you go?
Yeah, we have membership base. We have got offices in all the districts. So if we say we are going to the West District, so our office there would work with the committee and mobilize people. And in that training, we don't train disabled people alone. We train them and other people, like their parents or their friends and whoever comes there. So we do provide that training. So it's not really, it's a kind of a mainstreaming training, not only for disabled people.
You mentioned that the media is also used sometimes to distribute these mm-hmm. messages. What has been the role of the media in making the electoral process more inclusive in Zanzibar, not just maybe for people with disabilities, but overall, what have they done to make it more inclusive?
Well, though they publish, but the problem is that sometimes media, I don't know how to describe that, some of the media are aligned to some political parties, so that becomes a little bit difficult. But the problem is, if any media is talking anything on the aspect of opposition parties, then that media is going to be attacked. So this is the problem that really we're facing. So just as they used to say that if you are not with me, you're against me, which is wrong. I may not be with you, but I may not be against you, but I'm just working to see how things are going to be better. So, but the media generally, they've played a good role in educating the people, especially the electronic media like television and radio and all that. The print media, they do the same. But as I said, you know, sometimes they do create controversies. But generally, I think, but these radios and television is more efficient, because when you're talking of many people maybe cannot afford to buy papers, but many people can just sit around in a club or in a group of communities and the radio switched on, and then at least you can be able to hear that. And also we've got community television. They're just being stationed in some places, and just people group themselves and they watch and listen to that. So these are more very effective, radio and television. Newspapers, many people cannot read and cannot afford to buy the papers. Not only afford, they are not also well distributed. Most of the papers are just distributed in town. If you live outside the town, you don't find any shop selling newspapers there.
You mentioned that, you showed me actually an article that a newspaper ran on how to have greater participation of people with disabilities. Are there other examples of maybe radio programs that were specifically targeted with this message?
Yeah, for example, we have got our own radio program. It's a weekly program. We call it The Voice of Disabled People. So that one is running thematic. On thematic areas. So when it comes to election, we're talking of civic education. So we'll be talking more about that. Civic education, elections, and all that. Also, we have got our own television program. So we do highlight that. We do produce our own newsletter. So at least in our part we do have. And we have a very good cooperation with the media, at least our organization. And they do support us a lot. Whenever we've got an issue, we just call them. And then they come and they could just put that on the papers, on the radio, on the TV. For example, on 3rd December, we have this International Day of Disabled People. So they are going to help us also to send the message across the country. So we are working very closely with the media. We are trying as much as possible not to fight with the media. Sometimes you have to, but you have also, because you know, they can destroy you. They can build you, but they can destroy you easily. I'm sure in the States it's the same. You can see how media built Obama and how it destroyed Bush.
Now, in this relationship with the media that you're speaking about here, is it the private media or the public media that you interact with?
With both. Both. In Zanzibar, we've got only one government media, papers. It's only one. And then the TV and radio. These are public media. But also we're using private media. Like most of the newspapers are private media. So we're using them.
What are the aspects of election administration in which people with disabilities are involved? And how is this changing?
Well, as I said, you know, at least now we have one of our person who is on the committee that sits with the ZEC. They're not a member of ZEC, but they sit with ZEC as a committee where they discuss, you know, administration of the election. So that person representing us is the one who raised our concerns to the electoral committee through that committee. So that's how we are functioning.
Are there others that you have evidence of that maybe people with disabilities are being employed in elections administration apart from this example?
No, so far no. Though this time we are going to try, because you know they are capable people, should be able to. So we're going to try to see if they can employ at least in some of these either polling stations or whatever. But I think that's something that we are going to do now.
Is that something you have discussed with the ZEC so far, or is it for later?
Not. We have just discussed internally, and we hope maybe in the next meeting our representative will be able to raise that issue.
I'd like to ask you, for the future, what steps would you recommend, and to whom would you recommend them as a matter of priority in order to make this electoral process here more inclusive?
Well, I think we need to recommend, especially now when you have the UN Convention in place, when you have the national legislation in place, which stipulates all the rights and everything. So our major recommendation is that elections should be made as accessible as possible for all people, including people with disabilities. And they have also to look into the election laws, electoral laws, and to see what gaps they have after all these developments so that they can be able to make amendments to that particular laws. But what we are really looking now, not only for disabled people to vote, but we want disabled people to get into the process of becoming members of parliament, members of the House of Representatives. So we are in the process of recommending an amendment to the Constitution so that they form a constituency for disabled people, or at least, and this is not strange, Uganda has done that and South Africa have done that. So they've got a constituency, and there you find that disabled people are elected into the political positions. So each type of disability is getting represented. And once we get that one, it means our influence would be much more, because they will be in the legislature, so they should be able to influence some of these legislations and some of the laws. That is what we are we are now planning, and we've already started to advocate for that.
When do you think something like this, is it possible, is it likely to become a possibility?
Well, I'm not sure. We are trying to work hard for 2010, which I don't know, but that's our target, you know. And if we miss that one, so at least the next one. But we are working very hard to see that we meet this target of 2010.
Finally, I'd like to ask you about your role as an observer. Are there examples of election irregularities you observed, and if you observed, any steps to correct them, what they were?
That's too long. It was 1995. It's now how many, 10 years? More than 10 years.
Yes,
yeah. There were some irregularities. For example, there were some forms that once the votes have been calculated and known in that particular station, then there should be a specific form where all the candidates have to sign whether they accept that result or not. So in most polling stations, and some of those I observed, they were not available. So these were just written in papers. Some of the candidates refused to sign, or their agents refused to sign, and that was the starting of the chaos. It started there. And this happened even in the last election, the same, that those forms are not available. I don't know why, because they should be in the polling station. And then the other thing is, what I observed is, especially the results for the presidential election are not announced by each station. So they just collect them, but you never know, for example, station A, how much this candidate got and how much that candidate and all other candidates. So it remains so secret, you know, and then it ends up at the end of the day coming up with results which don't tally with what people have recorded. So this is something that maybe needs to be changed. Once you calculate in this is polling station A, you calculate the votes for each candidate, including the president. You say, in this polling station, candidate A got this, candidate B got this, candidate C got that, and the candidate for the presidency A got this, presidency B got this, and so on, and then they should be signed. So that could help maybe remove this kind of chaos. But otherwise, you know, you only tender for other candidates, but for the president, it's never. That's one thing. But the other thing is, the law itself is a bit difficult, as I observed it, that for presidency results, the chairman of the Electoral Commission is the final. Once he says that candidate A has won, it means there is no way you can appeal. That's the end of the story. That's also great chaos, because court is not involved. With other candidates, it's okay, but with the presidential candidates, the law stops you. Once the chairman says, okay, you got 10 and you got 5, that's final. So I observed that also as a kind of a problem. So it needs to be amended so that, you know, at least if there's any problem, that could be taken to court, where you should be able to put your claims, and then the court should be able to make investigations and then come up with a judgment. So that's another thing that I have observed that is really part of this chaos.
So at present there's no way of registering a dispute with the electoral process?
With the president.
With the presidential election.
Yes, yeah. There's no way. What the chairman of the Electoral Commission announces, and that's the final. With other candidates, you can take petitions to court. That's allowed, but only with the presidential election.
Has there been some sort of a move on the part of civil society to change this law?
Well, it could. Maybe when you send it back, I can remove this one. But most of the civil society organization in Zanzibar are not really strong enough for that. That's why I'm telling you that on 27, 28, I'm initiating with the UN Civil Society Advisory Committee to start a civil society forum. So at least to discuss on policy issues, to discuss on legislation issues and all that, so that they can be able. But so far, no, they are not very strong on that. It's very, very few. Maybe the Legal Center and just a few other organizations.
So this thing you're organizing on December 27th and 28th, is this specific to election law or is this?
No. This is not. This is just the initiation to start a forum. So we're going to have some papers, what they're calling this One UN. And then we've invited one or two other people to talk about civil society movements, their responsibilities and all that kind of things. And then later on, maybe we're going to finalize maybe forming a small committee that should work on this forum in the future, and then to give the terms of reference and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that is all the questions I have. Is there something that you feel we should have discussed that we haven't brought up?
Oh, I think you've brought up many issues. Well, I think the only thing is, I think we need to see how, because you know disabled people are the most marginalized in society, whether here or anywhere else, that's a fact. So with that marginalization, it means many disabled people are disempowered to understand their rights. So I feel that we need to see how we are going to remove this stereotype kind of attitude and creating an enabling environment where people with disabilities feel that they are free in their own society, in their own country, and they can be able to participate not only in elections but in any other program or activity that concerns these communities as well. So maybe later on, if you can find an organization in the States who could work with them, especially on these electoral issues, that would be fine.
That sounds very good. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Thank you.